call the meeting order.
Thank you. And I think we should all go around and say our names just for the recording purpose. So this is, I'll start here. This is Holden.
This is Natalie.
Ellie.
This is Tim.
Wendy.
Stephanie.
Terry.
Alexander.
Josh.
And we're waiting on Greg and Fred.
And Wendy's on the line.
Cool. We won't forget about you again. So we're going to change the order of the meeting a little bit because Greg and Fred are late, and I want to form for the budget stuff. I think we're actually going to start with the research update. So the research update is attachment C, and we're having a meeting just on this topic tomorrow night, and we're going to release, like, some sort of audio and attachments, although, you know, we don't know exactly what yet. So that's just something to keep in mind. I think Carrie's coming to that. I think Fred is coming to that as well. But the basic thing that we just want to talk about is where we stand on research, and we just want everyone on the board to be comfortable with where we are and what we're doing. And, you know, basically it's been a struggle to find charities that we feel really good about, which is our new kind of definition of top charity. You know, we kind of realized last year people are mostly giving to our number one charity. It's important that it be a charity we feel really good about. It's important that we don't over-focus on meeting some sort of predefined criteria. So we've gone much more open-ended with our research process. We've basically had a whole bunch of flags for every kind of charity that we think is interesting or promising. We've ordered them by priority of how good we think they're, you know, how likely we think they are to become the number one. We contact them. We were not as efficient as we could have been earlier in the process because we would kind of, you know, we called a bunch of charities and then we kind of went back and forth with them for a very long time. When I think the time would have been better spent calling more charities. So that's something that I think we could have done better. Now we're more focused on contacting as many as we can, getting an opening feel for them, and only proceeding if they think we're among the very most promising. We've contacted a bunch of groups. We've looked at a bunch of groups. We've done a lot of work, and we haven't found anyone that we feel as good as we felt about Village Reach last year. Village Reach does not have as much room for more funding, especially short-term, as it had last year. So that's kind of where we stand. And you know, we're happy to discuss who we think are the top contenders, et cetera, but we wanted thoughts on that.
What's the argument for not publishing the list of people that you're looking at? And
we do. We publish that. We don't publish. So what we have is a list of all the charities we're considering. We don't keep it as updated as we could about exactly what stage everyone is in. The main issue that we're dealing with when thinking about what we publish about charities when is that we want to give we don't want our process for it ever to be a negative for a charity to agree to undergo our process where, you know, you would be better off ignoring our initial email than responding to it and talking to us. And so we always want to give charities the opportunity at the end of the game to basically have us not publish anything other than that we tried to talk to them and we couldn't. And that's the, you know, that's the compromise we've come to. So, I mean, the full list is online. The fully updated status is not online. That would be, you know, we could do that. It would be a little bit of a pain to manage. And we'd also have to be thinking about what exactly we would say about each one so we didn't cause someone, you know, we always want to give them that option of wiping the slate clean if they want to. Now, public information is public, so it's only in reference to, like, their interactions with us, and, you know, that's where we let them basically. Obviously, they don't tell us what to write, but they tell us whether we write what we want or whether we just write decline to participate. And I think that's a pretty fair compromise that allows us to, you know, to be transparent, but also to never have a charity kind of, you know, suffer damage as a result of engaging with us, that's an incentive that we really want to avoid.
Now, I can certainly see the benefit to the general community of better defining what each of those stages that people fall out at, and just, I don't think it has to be anything remotely like real time. It could be once a quarter, it could be every 6 months.
Right.
But to, particularly given that we're having a hard time finding charities we feel good about, it often looks like it's hard to tell what's happening.
Right.
And so publishing a very, very broad list and showing, you know, we're casting the net really, really widely. Look at all these charities that are on our list. and here's where they fill out. And if you want to go off and pursue them further, be our guest. But you can see how we winnowed people down and where the bottlenecks are coming.
Right. Yeah, I think it's a good point. I mean, I think we could be doing more frequent, just like here's the status. The thing that's held us back from that is just that a lot of these charity investigations, it's like we don't want to say much about them until they're over and until we know what we can publish and what we can't. So that holds us back from getting into any kind of substantive research update. Now, just saying, like, here are the ones we've contacted. And, I mean, it's even hard. Like, we're not even sure how comfortable we feel saying, like, we've contacted these guys and we're engaged in conversation with them. We don't know how comfortable we feel saying that because we want to give them at the end, the option at the end to just say they didn't participate. So we don't want someone going back.
We can basically say, here's the full list. I mean, the thing that's easy, and it's just a question of how much value it has, is here's the full list that we're considering. Here's the ones that we've contacted.
Right.
And then here's the ones that we've published.
Right.
Both declined and not. And those seem like those three stages are easy. We wouldn't, if we didn't keep it up in real time, that would be not a big burden on us. Mm-hmm. I don't know how informative that would be. It's all that middle ground where there's charities that, you know, we contacted months ago, but we haven't done the final nailing down of exactly what the page is going to say, where I'm not sure what we could say about them right now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in the research, the process and all that, you know, there's a series of heuristics that you're using to winnow the big list, and here are the ones of the people who make it on the list. You know, are those heuristics that you're using before you're actually directly engaging with them hard to understand or explain?
The flags are easy to understand and explain. The flags are where we mark someone as, like, interesting, someone we want to learn more about. The process of taking the flag charities and deciding who gets a call first is much more just, you know, just have a conversation and decide who we, you know, feel most optimistic about, and that would be a much harder thing to explain.
It's also just, you know, as our staff has grown, you know, there's 7 people here now, and we have a lot of people that can call charities and talk to charities. It's a very valuable part of the process to go a level beyond just the website, and so the bar for making a phone call it's not as if the charity meets an objective standard criteria. If there's something interesting about them, we might choose to spend a few hours to, you know, do the call and have the follow-up to the phone call because we could easily learn something valuable. But I mean, the thing that's always been a challenge that, like, if you had asked us a few years ago how we first saw things going, it would have been much more real-time updates of the charity reviews. Like, there's a lot of research we've done that we just don't feel like we found the way to share it publicly without creating the term for the charity to participate in the process.
It is a frustration because we have a lot we could share. You know, it's not like it used to be where we kind of were improvising until we got to recommendations and we had to go back and write everything up. I mean, we have a lot, but we just, I don't know, we want to give charities that option because if we don't, then we've got the wrong structure in place. So it kind of ends up on an annual cycle.
I mean, I think that's worth thinking about more into the end of the year. Of finding a way to publish more of that information in a way that doesn't, you know, I understand the need not to discourage charities from engaging at all, but it seems to me that there is some other way of publishing some of that information along the way so that you are, given that we're unlikely to have somebody that's, we're recommending a strongly village reach, that people have some list of the interesting charities and their limitations and can realistically invest in a second best.
I mean, the thing we will have, so 2 things. I mean, 1 thing is, you know, we're doing this research meeting tomorrow night. We put together a document for that meeting that has more information about the charities that we're looking at and where they stand than anything we've put out thus far. We plan to make some version of that document public. You know, everything in there is pretty close to publishable, and we'll, you know, we'll put something up. And so there are levels that we could publish, and it probably makes sense to have, you know, like some milestones throughout the year, you know, where there are things that we publish. You know, we have a lot of stuff we can say that we feel pretty comfortable saying. So that, I think, that makes sense to me. The other thing on this topic is a little tangential, but we discuss sometimes is, well, how should we deal with this problem of the information not being public? Or an approach we could take is, as opposed to saying to the charities, you're talking to us off the record unless you explicitly allow us to make it on the record, and nothing is on the record until you give us permission. You know, we could just behave like journalists and say, look, you're talking to us on the record right now. You should be ready for us to publish anything any day. You know, it seems to us that the charities are going to make the trade-off of engaging less, and we'll see less and learn less, and that's just not the right call to make right now.
I don't think that's right, but I do think it's worth thinking harder about what is a way that more information could be shared without creating those disincentives that give people a sense that, A, both that something's happening, but also if we're not, you know, seeing two charities a year that we can highly recommend.
Right. What did we do?
Well, that's something.
That I wouldn't worry about because we do, like, we're basically on an annual cycle. So that's a deadline we have that's meaningful. You know, by Thanksgiving, we're aiming to revise our recommendations and publish everything that goes into our process. There will still be some charities where we're not, you know, we're waiting for them to tell us what we can publish about them. But the important stuff will be out there. The stuff about our process will be out there. So that happens once a year at minimum. And the question is whether it should be happening more often than that. Certainly, we put something together for our upcoming research meeting that gives some insight without giving away anything too sensitive, although in the end, we did decide that we wanted to keep it confidential because it's giving away, you know, a little bit about, like, how we're thinking of charities, which we wouldn't necessarily want to be out there while we're still in the middle of deciding things.
Yeah, and then one thing just to clarify is, you know, Village Reach last year just may have been a very unique situation. And so, you know, I think we're going to find we have organizations on, you know, on the list that we talk about that, you know, I think are going to be good places to give. We may just not feel as strongly as we did last year that if they don't get funded, their full funding doesn't get closed right now, it's just something is totally wrong.
I do. I actually want to amend something I just said. The reason that we don't want to share everything that's in that research update, I mean, we do tell charities where they stand if they ask us, so that's not the part that's sensitive. It's just, I actually don't really remember. There was just stuff we weren't, like, we were comfortable sharing it with some people, but not, like, having
the part that we don't want to share is that there's a charity where we want to give them the option to say decline to participate.
Right.
That makes sense to us. And now, if we put in the document something of, like, we've reviewed their evidence, and we don't find the evidence compelling, well, that's saying something very different than they declined to participate, and we don't see the way out right now of not offering that option.
This is something we didn't have together in time for the meeting, but we, in time to send it out with the attachments, but I think it might be worth just going over, like, the categories, Ellie.
Yeah, sure.
I think that might be helpful. We do have this. Do we have any? Never mind. I'm not going to go there with the projection setup. But
we can like it. I mean, I think we will send out this document to the board. We sent it to all the people attending the meeting, but we'll send the attachment that we put together for the meeting that goes through the specific organizations to the board after the meeting. But you,
right.
Why don't you go through?
So we're looking at an attachment, right? I'm looking at an attachment right now, and I'm going to try to communicate it to you. But these are, like, the basic categories of charities that we find promising. And they kind of, you know, they all have their strengths and weaknesses, and I think it might be helpful to share those categories and hear, you know, just so you guys know how we're thinking of this stuff, because it's not the same GiveWell that it was a year or two ago, where it was all about, you know, this kind of template and proven cost-effective, blah, blah, blah. I mean, we still ask the same questions. What do you do? What's the evidence that it works? How cost-effective is it? But we're not as rigid in figuring out who's interesting and who's good, and I think that's how we need to be in order to have, you know, a better shot at finding more top charities. So, you know, type number one is the type that we have found most promising so far, which is kind of these, well, I mean, it's not the only type we found promising, but it's kind of large international bureaucratic organizations that are devoted to particular health interventions. So examples would be like Stop Tuberculosis Partnership, the Schistosomiasis Control Initiative, the Against Malaria Foundation. There's obvious disadvantages to these guys. They are definitely removed from what they're doing. You know, they're kind of, it's like an office, and they're working all over the world, and there's just so many steps in between your money and what happens on the ground, and it's very hard to really understand, you know, to really understand the evidence of effectiveness and to get a representative view of their activities and understand what the next dollar does. So those are issues and downsides. You know, another problem with this kind of group is they're not the most exciting. They don't have this, they're usually not trying really to innovate or to do something new or, you know, to do something that really could be huge. They're more just, hey, the Against Malaria Foundation, what do? They deliver bed-nets. They're just trying to get bed-nets to people. So those are the disadvantages. The advantages is that certain health interventions just have really good track records, and just seems like they've got a low burden of proof, and it just seems like you're really helping people and empowering people if you can deliver more bed nets. And the fact is that we just haven't found groups that can do better than that from what we can see. And so I'll get to the other kind of groups, but that's, you know, frankly, those are kind of the groups that, that seem to be doing best in our process right now. And it's not because we've got, I don't think it's because we have a fetish for monitoring and evaluation or anything like that. I just think it's because when somebody's giving out bed nets is something that's got its own track record. It's worked really well. It's really cost effective. It's cheap. It's, you know, there's not that many hurdles to delivering bed nets compared to some of the other things these charities are doing. And so it's just something that, you know, it's not as hard to feel good about it as some of the more elaborate things that other groups are doing that, that we haven't felt as good about.
Can I jump in here, please?
Yes.
I just want to say, like, as I was reading all of this, the research update, and as you're talking, I mean, I think you're right. I don't disagree with the premise, but I think delivery and the organization itself actually really matters. And in keeping with GiveWell's mission of your highest impact for your dollar, I mean, I just really think that we know that certain methods of bed net delivery are more effective than others. So to have a blanket statement like, you know, we're interested in programs that, you know, are in the field of health, I think that's not doing justice to what donors can do. Yeah.
That's not what I'm doing at all. I'm not making a blanket statement at all. I'm talking about empirical patterns in the groups that we have found interesting. So when I say
okay,
we found...
that's fine. I totally understand that. I think that the update didn't necessarily depict it the way that you're expressing it now.
Okay.
So having just read that, I'm glad you clarified, and I think it's important to convey that, that the rigor... and the, you know, evaluation of the delivery mechanisms and the organization itself is are still stronger criteria than merely health, for example. The first filter is rigor, not topic.
Right. No, that is absolutely the case. And so I don't – what I'm not saying and what we don't mean to express is that we divide organizations into these categories and prioritize them based on that. It's the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm.
We've looked at a bunch of organizations, we've decided how we felt about them, and after the fact, we're describing patterns in what we've seen. Okay.
Yep.
Okay, so cluster two is, the second two clusters are both in this category of, like, smaller organizations that are trying to innovate, like, a new solution to an old problem. And so, you know, a lot of them are maybe referred to as social entrepreneurs. Examples would be Village Reach, Operation Asha, which does kind of a intensified tuberculosis treatment and case finding program, Mothers to Mothers, which does treatment of infants to treatment of mothers to prevent transmission of HIV. And then there's some non-health ones. I mean, to me, definitely, you know, we have found the health ones more promising for a couple reasons. One is, again, just that burden of proof thing, that when they're doing something that, you know, basically has a lot of evidence behind it, it's much easier to see what's, it's a lot easier to feel good about giving to them. And then the other thing is that a lot of these non-health ones have just not been as responsive to us and haven't engaged with us as much. But anyway, those are, you know, in general, these are organizations that are trying something new, and we are just looking at them and not really seeing how they're holding themselves accountable, how they have held themselves accountable, you know, what they think they're going to be able to deliver, what they have tried to deliver in the past and how it's gone. I mean, we're just running into, and not always, like, you know, obviously I think Village Reach is the strongest of these in terms of having some meaningful data, but we've just continuously run into things that are, the data is very, very, very thin. I mean, I think even the Village Reach data is thin. But encouraging. And most of these groups just have, you know, very little data. It's very kind of impossible to make anything of it. And a lot of times the data is not really getting at the questions that we are concerned about. And so that's just been the pattern that we've observed in those more innovative organizations. And some of these are organizations that have been around for a long time. So just because they're trying to innovate doesn't mean they're new and doesn't mean that there's no reason for them to have a track record. And that's just kind of been the thing we've seen, and look, I don't want this to come off as a criticism because this is tough work, and like I think a lot of time it's because it's really hard to collect the data that one would need to see how things are going, but it just doesn't seem to be happening, and that's all I'm saying. So the next category is this kind of organizations focused on very direct forms of help. So examples would be give directly, a group that's literally giving cash transfers to people. Naya Health is basically running a hospital, so is Partners in Health. Fistula Foundation is doing surgeries, just things where it's very, you know, it's an organization that doesn't have a huge amount of, it doesn't have this kind of innovation goal, but it's more just trying to deliver something in a very direct way. Again, these appeal to us because it's just easier to feel good about what your money's doing. Like, when I compare these to the innovators, innovation is great, and I'd love to see it. But when I just have absolutely no idea what's going on, and if things are going well or poorly, and I feel like I'm never going to find out, then I would rather be funding someone to just run a hospital than funding someone to have, like, a revolutionary new method of, like, you know, to give an example, logistics for health systems, right, which Village Reach does that, and I think they've got evidence, but that's just, you know, a difference. And so those are organizations that we do end up feeling a little better about, even though the upside is lower, even though, you know, it's hard to, you're not going to see as much transformative impact from these groups. You're just, you know, but we want to help people. We want to empower people. And our kind of philosophy is it's better to empower people than to try and do the revolution yourself if the choice is just between those two. And we do expect innovators and guys doing new things to be empowering individuals along the way and not just aiming for, you know, for a day far away. So that's the next category. Then there's some categories that we haven't looked into as much. Definitely research itself, funding research and funding studies is something that we're interested in and just haven't found a really good way to evaluate. And that's especially true of medical research, because medical research overall has a really good track record. I mean, all these health interventions that we talk about, someone had to do the research to develop them, and it's really good that we have them. And there's, like, a lot of other technologies we could really use, like a tuberculosis vaccine, for example. So that's, like, that's one thing that I think is appealing about this kind of group, is just that activity has definitely worked before. It's definitely got precedent that you can see, that you can kind of touch. Another thing that's good about this group, I mean, it's related. I have this vague impression like the ecosystem is more functional for research than it is for charity. Just the methods of accountability in terms of what you're expected to produce. Like, I know it's not perfect, but looking at the track record, it just seems like the mechanisms are working to produce something. That when, you know, when you basically have well-funded, prestigious groups doing research, eventually something comes out of it, even if there are a lot of dead ends. So it's attractive to me in that sense. Like, when I think about who I trust and which experts I trust, et cetera, like, I just feel a lot more trust for this, like, for this sector than for the aid delivery sector, because I know more about what this sector has produced. And I also know more about the methods by which people are held accountable. So that's, you know, those are advantages of research organizations. We've been saying forever that we'd like to investigate these. It's been really hard for us to find ways that we feel really good about kind of, you know, distinguishing between them, knowing when someone has a really promising project versus when they have a project that's a dead end. I mean, in many ways, that's something we can never know, but just knowing what the good bets are is something that we just don't have the domain expertise to know. So it's been a challenge, but I think we're going to be looking into these more. And I think especially one of the big things that we're looking at is the room for more funding questions. So, you know, I think one of the biggest questions with the research organization is what could you do with more money, and how high would that be on the agenda? If someone, you know, really needs money to do clinical trials of potential vaccines for deadly diseases, that's one thing. And if they've kind of got that sort of stuff funded and their projects are more kind of miscellaneous, that's not as encouraging. So that's going to be one of our main questions for them. We're also putting more effort now into water and sanitation-focused organizations, and that's because we, you know, we've learned a little more about that sector. I think we feel a little more positive on it than we used to, and that's another one where we're kind of struggling to figure out what are the right questions to ask, but we're getting there. And then the final category I put is behavior change organizations, but that's not something we found very promising. Like, we haven't found a behavior change organization that we think is making any, you know, any convincing case that they're changing behavior. And obviously changing behavior, well, that's a hard thing to do and a high burden of proof. Hey, Fred, do you know, like, how to get Greg? Can you try and do that?
Greg has to come.
Kelly emailed me 20 minutes ago saying he'd be here in a few minutes.
Oh, 20 minutes ago he said that? If you want me, I'll take a look.
Kelly said that,
I'm pretty
good
at finding him.
Try to chase him down.
Okay. Sorry for being late, everybody.
Yeah, this is Fred Post.
My penalty to karma was that I, injured myself.
David's unusual dress code at Bridgewater.
All right, I'll be back in 1 second. Sorry.
Those are the categories. I'd be happy to take questions while Fred tries to chase down Greg.
And examples of behavior change, what do media impact and toss can do?
Media impact is an interesting, population media center and media impact are groups that they're basically trying to get helpful messages.
They develop soap operas in the developing world that they put on the radio or TV to encourage safe sex, family planning behavior, other messages, and the girls in school.
Environmental.
Yeah. So, there are groups that we were interested in because if you are able to effectively distribute that message across a large population and it's effective, you could change, you could do a lot of good with relatively little money.
Right.
And they were publishing a lot of research on what they had done.
But then another group is Toast On. That's just been recommended to us very strongly by two different major funders who we have reason to believe would know what they're talking about. But I don't know. They haven't engaged with us. So, right, they just declined to participate. But they're doing something that sounds very difficult and very worthwhile, which is just, changing certain behaviors that seems like would really be good to change. Okay, we've got two people just walked in. Can you guys say your names?
Greg Jensen.
Fred Post.
Oh, Greg Jensen and Fred Post. Guys, to catch you up, we changed the order of the meeting so that you guys would miss the research update and not know what we're doing. So we just basically went through the... I was going to wrap up with the big picture anyway, so I'll just do that now. The big picture is that it's been our number one priority for the year by far. We've put in a lot of work into this, but we've also raised our bar for what it means to be confident in a charity. We haven't found any charities that we feel great about. Obviously, we're going to have recommendations. We've found some that we feel better about. And one of the overriding themes here is that it's really, really rare to see a charity that, at least this is more me talking, I'm not sure that everyone on staff agrees with this, but it's really rare to see a charity that has data that is meaningful. And that's different from saying that data is never meaningful. So, you can learn a lot about the history of vaccinations and bed nets and cook stoves by reading the academic literature. But when you go to the organization, even if it's a bed net organization, they're not, in the end, going to have data that tells you a whole lot about how their activities are going. So that leaves you in a tough spot. And I think in terms of what we end up going off, so in some ways, just having the conversation about their data is helpful just to get a sense of how they think. Are they asking the tough questions? Are they answering the questions honestly? Or are they kind of just, spinning everything and wasting a lot of money on meaningless data collection that just gets spun? That's one thing that's helpful. But, some of the things we end up making our decisions on are just, A, how good is the intervention? That's an area where data is very valuable. Bed nets has a good track record. A lot of other interventions don't. When we think about the future and how we're going to find good organizations in the future, some of the things we've thought about are that we, maybe want to be doing more site visits. That was certainly something we thought was meaningful when we went to India. I don't think a site visit could make me confident in an organization by itself, but I think they add a lot of color, and so that could become a bigger part of what we do. And finally, there's this, the new initiative that we've all discussed, could be a way to improve the relevance of data and the transparency of it so that you do get to that point where there is meaningful data. But right now, there doesn't seem to be. And that isn't necessarily even a criticism. That could just be a function of the fact that the kinds of activities that they're trying to do are inherently just not, that we don't have the tools to measure them right now. So that's where we are in our process. So, as far as how things are going to go for GiveWell, I think we're going to have recommendations. We've changed our way of doing recommendations. So it used to be kind of you know, Giveawell used to be a very small team, and we kind of all agreed, and we kind of had rigid criteria, not rigid, but more laid out criteria, and we agreed on who met them. Now it's more a matter of, you know, we have a standard set of questions that we ask, but these groups, a lot of them are much more apples and oranges, and I think what we're going to end up doing is we're all going to kind of rank our top 30 charities and do a weighted average and have that be our rankings, and then we're going to put our reasoning out in public. So it's going to be, here are the strengths of this group, here are the weaknesses, here's the answers to all the questions that we ask, and if you want to know where they stand in the rankings, then you have to read our vote and maybe the blog post that individual staffers put out on why they voted the way they did. That's our plan. We've done this kind of voting thing, I think, twice so far, just as an exercise with all the staff where we do a forced ranking of where we'd give today if we had to. We have a discussion about it. I think it's pretty interesting stuff. So that's kind of the future. So we are going to have top charities. I think our top charities are going to be pretty good. But, you know, we're struggling to find opportunities that we think are really slam dunk. Questions on that stuff? Okay. So now I'm going to go back to item one on the agenda. Item two, actually. That's the budget review. So I think it will be useful. It will be useful to get a formal kind of approval or vote on this budget. Let me open it up one sec. This is attachment A. So the story with the budget is, you know, basically good news. I mean, when we started this year, fundraising was our number two priority for the year. We had a big gap. Now I think we're, you know, we've got a big surplus projected for 2011. And I think we're financially able to hire more people, and I think we want to, because we have seven people right now, and that will be five because two of them are temporary, and we feel pretty good about the productivity of a seven-person team and how we're able to use them. So it's going to be a challenge. Like, I don't have great ideas for how to find employees, but that's something that we're going to be working on a little bit and planning to do because we think we can. And we're, you know, we still project a big deficit for 2012, but a lot of that is just because we have to be conservative about projections that far out, and I don't really expect, you know, I expect that we'll be able to raise the money we need to raise. Another point on this budget that we do have to consider is that we're pretty close, not super close, we're pretty close to hitting our reserves policy, which is where we're kind of holding a lot in cash relative to our forward expenses, and we have a policy that we give away money when that happens to prevent us from piling up forever. The way that works is that it's based on what we're holding, what we're projecting to raise, and what we're projecting to spend. And the projection to spend is conservative by design. Like, we pretty much plan for what we might want to do to make sure that we can do it. And that's always been the intent of this policy. So
conservative in this?
Conservative means we're going to spend a lot. Yeah, right. I think this projection we have is pretty conservative, but not crazily conservative. But it is, you know, it's a key point in that projection is that we put two hires in for April. That's something that I think is not super likely, but definitely possible and something that we want to do. And so that's, you know, but having that projection is a key input in the fact that our reserves policy is not triggered. And one thing you guys should know is that I believe our current level of, like, operating reserves, which is one of the key inputs into this equation, I believe that's understated in the attachment I sent you, because I believe that, like, we're still transitioning accountants, and we have some stuff marked as restricted that I think should be marked as unrestricted. So I think it's understated by about $70,000, and so that actually puts us pretty close to triggering policy if we weren't planning to hire these people. So I just want to make sure everyone's aware of that and knows, like, you know, we're not giving away money now based on this reserves policy, but that's where we stand.
And remind me, given that you don't think Village Reach has room for more funding, where that money would end up going?
Well, we do think they have some room for more funding. It's not as urgent. It's not as short term. And we also think it's less than we're going to be able to move this year. So we think if they stayed number one, I think they would, you know, they would be much. But they are number one right now because we're much slower before December. We don't move as much money. And so we're comfortable with them getting a lot of money right now from us. And we intend by Thanksgiving to have a new set of top charities. Like, I think basically by Thanksgiving we're going to, you know, we don't want to be revising our rankings every day.
Like, the list is going to refresh around mid-November.
Right.
By the time, if it was triggered.
Right. And then at that time, right. And we have money restricted to grants, too. And we're, like, we actually have been holding it, although I think at some point soon we'll want to give it away because it's been a little while. We've been holding it in case we find, like, a better opportunity than the ones we see. You know, just for a few months, not for, like, a very long time. But that's just restricted funds. It's ours to give away, you know, and we've thought of various things we can do with it, but probably, I mean, I think there's a good chance at this point. What do you think, Ellie?
No, well, we agreed at the last meeting that we would hold it until the end of the year, and
okay.
At the end of the year, give it to Village Reach or the other number one.
Yeah, whoever's the number one. Oh, no, yeah, that, I agree with that, actually. I think the best policy is probably actually to hold it not till Thanksgiving, but till after December. Because then at that point, we really know what happened, and then we know where the gaps remain. We don't want to give it now and just have that, you know, cause us to run out of room for more funding earlier.
I have a question just about the staff, which you may have covered earlier, but I thought it was interesting, the comment from that place that you guys sent out surveys to, the feedback on getting a inconsistent. I think it was one of those blog posts in July about inconsistent responses from different GiveWell members to questions and it causing
right.
churn. It looked like you asked for them to contact you,
yeah.
but didn't see anything back.
Yeah.
I don't know whether or not there was much to make of that. Like, it wasn't, I don't know, out of the number of people that responded, it was obviously one person, one group, and there were only two groups that seemed unsatisfied with the experience, and this is probably one of them. But I don't know if you made anything of that. As you're thinking about more headcount and the ability to have a consistent, whether or not consistency is that important, but quality trained group doing what you're trying to do.
Yeah, I think there are two things. I mean, one is there's not a lot to make of that single example. And, you know, the survey covered a long period, like it was everything of GiveWell up until the point of the survey. So it covers a lot of different types of interaction between charities and us. That said, I mean, we've bringing on a lot of people, we're a lot more thoughtful about the issue of training and quality and thinking about how to get people on board with the things that we're doing. And so that, and we could talk specifically about what we do, but I mean, things like, you know, making sure that someone who has been around longer is on calls and is sitting in to train people and recording calls and listening to the master to see how the calls go. I mean, those are things that we're doing now. That we didn't think to do 3 years ago.
And so are you saying you know what the particular point was and are choosing to reject it, or you don't know what the point is?
We don't know what the point is, and the organization that submitted it anonymously, so we don't have a way of following up with them.
Okay. In your listening on calls and doing that kind of thing, do you see typically inconsistent? Was their comment consistent with your read for those measures, or does it seem one-off and that the training is by and large they're getting consistent quality across the people, or that it's happening in consistent quality? Or the appropriate...
The issue that organization raised about inconsistent quality across people doing it is not something that we see, largely because, you know, most of staff, aside from Natalie, pretty much everyone is very new. And so we're holding our eyes on the call, and, you know, we're doing the work as much as the other person is, and so that's not happening. The, you know, thing that I think that organization may have been talking about was that our, you know, the questions we ask and the criteria we have for judging an organization are shifting, and we might ask a set of questions in July, and they send us all the information, and then we want to ask different questions 3 months later because we've learned something about...
Yeah, I saw that.
And so I think that, you know, my instinct is that what happened there is more of the second thing, you know, more of a feeling that we were asking different questions and then attributing it to a change in the person they were talking to, as opposed to an actual problem in quality and, you know, people doing it, asking different questions and not knowing what had come before.
Holden, the budget review seems to talk about that you're underspending budget, but based on the figures you provided, the only significant underspending is moving a payment from 1 month to another. Other than that, it looks like you're significantly, well, not significantly, but you're over budget.
I don't agree with that characterization. I don't think we said anywhere that we significantly underspent. That's not something I ever intended to say. We're about on budget. I mean, I put a budget in there. It said how we did compared to budget. It had notes on why. If you made that adjustment for the payment we shifted, we'd be at about, 160 grand with a budget of about 157, and I think that's fine.
I don't think it's just the lead up to it that we're...
No, I don't think so. It says our financial situation has improved, but that's on the revenue side. That's not because we've spent less. It's not like I'm not claiming we found some great efficiency.
We have slightly lower projected 2011 expenses.
Right.
For everything in that.
Though that's not included in this.
That's
in the first budget chart.
That's like future expenses.
That's
went
a
down.
Second half of the year.
That explains the disparity between what it said and the figures.
Yeah. Sorry. No, I would don't want anyone to think that I think we got a lot more efficient. Since our last budget. I think we're about where we were.
And so what's the source of, if you're, I mean, is that just the time between people leave and new people get hired? Where are the savings in terms of projecting?
Oh, it says in there. I mean, basically we budgeted for a hire and, like, we haven't made that hire, and just a matter of how many hires we budgeted versus how many we made.
Okay, so there isn't really any change in cost.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's these tiny changes in, like,
There's little changes. Like, okay, we're paying more rent and we have more miscellaneous expenses because we have bigger staff, so I didn't have those in the budget before, and now I changed the forward budget so it has them. But those have very little impact.
What I'm still running into is the note that going forward, you lowered your expenses.
Right. That is because of the difference in hiring. I'm just explaining the difference between this projected budget and last projected budget.
Okay.
So this one has slightly lower expenses.
You shifted the assumptions about when hires happen.
Right. That's all. Okay. Yeah. The actual expenses came in very close to what we budgeted with, like, higher rent and miscellaneous. And we went over budget on our website by $44. Sorry. Okay. Other questions on the financials? Okay. Next up is the overall progress report. So we've already covered a lot of this. This is attachment B. This is kind of a mid-year progress report. We've been over the biggest two things. So, priority one, and this is I'm referring to the priorities we set at our beginning of the year plan. Priority one was research expansion, finding more top charities, and we've talked through a lot of that. That's something that we've, absolutely been putting more energy into anything else, and we've still struggled, but we're on pace to do what we said we'd do. Fundraising we've done really well. I mean, we weren't, we had a big gap, and now we have a big surplus, and some of that money is, like, one-off, not going to happen again. I mean, we kind of went all out, I guess, in terms of our fundraising, which is not that different from what we're normally doing. But we went after any funding source we could, and so some of that stuff is not repeating, but I think we're in okay shape.
I just want to drill down into that, particularly with the comments about what might happen depending on hires and what's going to happen to that surplus. The way it reads is that move from deficit to surplus is somewhat random, and you don't really know why it happened.
No, that's not
the case. That
that's happened. Not the case. It's revenue. The expenses are minor. That was just a projection thing. The revenue changed a lot because one of our top goals for the year was fundraising. I did everything that I could think of that was reasonably easy and reasonably productive to fundraise, which, by the way, was not a ton. Like, I haven't spent a ton of time on this. It's just like there were certain things that we could do that we did, and we've raised a lot of budgets.
And even though you think a lot of those are one-time things, you think that's fairly easy to replicate next year?
Well, we think some of that revenue is not happening next year, but some of it is, and we think that overall we're in good shape.
So are you choosing to be vague?
Yes. I mean, if you want details, you can ask, and then I might say, let's keep...
much more important, not that I don't care you do
right.
Why, but in terms of it's much more relevant to get your head around, like, where the sludge come from, what's causing that, than the cost thing and the $44 on the website and whatever, which
completely
you lay out in a lot of detail, where this is actually the thing that's going to make the break?
Yeah, in the written materials, I've definitely been vague intentionally. I've kept the revenue out of there. I just, that's donor, you know, that's personal information. Like, the board does have a right
that
to
that level. At one level, there's that. But then at a little bit more meta level of what's working, what's not working,
right,
in terms of creating this into an organization that's, like, anyway, some Coach Holden type thing, or what lessons are being learned, like, that stuff isn't clear.
You mean
on
the fundraising
side? $20,000 more than you expected.
Right.
You would lay out why, and if you raise $200,000 more or less, you're not laying out why you think that's happening and what's going on, and so you take this or leave it.
Okay, I mean, I'm like, what I'm saying to you, which if it's not enough, we may have to take some of this off the record or have certain people leave the room. But you know, what I'm saying to you is the reason is that we weren't really like, there were lots of sources that we could ask for money that we weren't asking because we didn't have a plan for how to use it. And we thought we would increase our credibility with them and save our own time and just be doing the right thing by not asking at that time. And then we needed money, and so we went and asked all the sources for money. I mean, that's the short story.
Okay. And so in terms of GiveWell's organizational, though, is that like Holden's Rolodex? Is that GiveWell's?
I think it's GiveWell's Rolodex. Yeah. I mean, obviously, like, if we had a leadership change, people would ask questions, but that's
I mean, the biggest source, and we can certainly talk about this, of new, or one of the largest sources of new funding is, you know, there are people who found GiveWell
right
3 years ago, and they started following us, and they said, how can we help you? And we said, give to our recommended charities, that's what we need, and they did that, and they followed us since, and they've given significantly to the recommended charities, and this year, early in the year, we went to them. And we're not talking about a ton of people, but enough that if, you know, they're willing to shift some of that recommended charities money to GiveWell money, because now they know us and they want to support the project and they see the value, that creates a significant source of funding. And I think that's a pool that, you know, there's some trade-offs there. Like, I think some of those people would prefer, if they could, to send their money to the recommended charities instead of GiveWell. At the same time, I mean, that's a pool that is growing, you know, as the people are finding our research and giving our recommended charities grow, they're, you know, potential future GiveWell donors if we need them.
Yeah, that's been one of the main things.
Do you feel like you've got adequate tracking of those relationships and those decisions? So
yeah,
we could get to a point of rotating through every 3 years which people we ask to shift some of the money to GiveWell?
Well, we're not rotating. I mean, I'm saying...
Right.
We basically went to everyone that we could and said, we want you to give to GiveWell, what can you do? And some people said, I will give to GiveWell. Some people said, I will give some to GiveWell. Some people said, we'll see, ask me again in December and tell me how things look. But, you know, we went through all of them. But, yeah, I mean, we're tracking all this, like, definitely. I mean, we have our contact list, we have our donors list. I have this thing where I list everyone and their likelihood of giving again and whether they'd rather give to us or give to top charities. So we're tracking all that. And it's, you know, it is important to know, like, we have kind of, I did kind of the things I could do, so we're not flush either. Like, I think we have a ways to go before we're, like, at the stage where we can, like, raise whatever we needed to operate. That's not where we are. I think where we basically are is, like, if we could find the people that we want to find, we could hire them, and we would be okay. Like, pretty much, you know, pretty much where we're hoping to be, but not, like, significantly above it. We're not sitting here way over. So, I mean, that's a thing to keep in mind that you guys should know. I mean, sustainability is still a work in progress. There's foundations that don't want to support us forever, and they're supporting us now because they think that we'll be able to find more supporters later, and I think they're right. I think we will be. So, but it's a work in progress, but I think it's going in the right direction. I mean, we're making contacts. There are people who find us because they're looking for a charity to give to. They give a lot to our top charity. We contact them. We just have a conversation. We develop a relationship over time, and eventually some of those people are willing to give to us. That's a model that I think has been working and will continue to work.
So I think my basic question is whether putting that process down in these documents, if you want people to help you with it and to be
right,
explicit and track it and see, that's the question that I'm asking. That,
right,
is more about why the degree of hiddenness of that process. So it would be good to know what the translation rates on those things are and stuff like that, which I think you could share.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, that's fair. I think we can probably try and do that for the next meeting.
And one thing that is worth keeping in mind is that, you know, we had a lot lot of fundraising things we could do. I mean, I wouldn't present it the way Holden did, that we did every single thing we could think of. I mean, we did the things that seemed
we did everything that I thought was a good bet.
Successful, and then we are in the situation we're in now, and so we're going to keep doing the donor relationship building thing because it's been pretty successful and it's pretty low cost. But we didn't, rack our brains of all the different fundraising things that we could do.
We didn't try anything crazy. We did everything that we thought was would have returns for a small amount of time.
I think it would be nice though to have a little more objective information on, without giving away anything that you consider confidential.
Right. Okay. Yeah, we'd be happy to do that. I think that's a good point.
Yeah. I'd rather never see your costs in so much detail again.
This is what nonprofit transparency means to everyone else. We have to get a good score by the traditional rules too. We used to have them in much more detail. We used to publish our budget line by line, and people were making comments on the internet about some train ticket or something.
I've never had.
No, that happened. I think my uncle, managed anyway. Okay, so progress report. That's fundraising. Then there's just how the new hires have been doing and how the update process has been going. I mean, I don't have a ton to say. I feel pretty good about our growth on that. Obviously, I'm sure you guys remember the time when we couldn't really even hire one person and make it work because we didn't know what we were doing, and it was totally open-ended, and so it was not really possible to manage them. Now we have a bunch of people, and we put, I don't know, you can ask them. I'm not going to say it's going perfectly, but we've put effort into documenting things, systemizing things, having kind of ground rules and having processes. And, even though our research process has become less rule-based, our ability to work with people has become better because we're just more systematic about it. It's less rule-based, but it's more systematic. So it's kind of, we know what questions we're asking. We know how to get in touch with someone, what to do next. We've got all that documented. Of course, we change it a lot, and we change the documentation. And then, we don't have the same kind of we're looking for evidence that meets criteria A, B, and C, which we eventually decided was just holding us back more than it was helping us. So that's, the new kind of rules for research are same process for contacting someone, same kind of basic questions you ask and get to the bottom of, and then you kind of do the best you can to figure out what else you want to know, and then you vote.
So since you suggested we ask them, why don't we ask them?
You might want to ask them when I'm not around.
I'm happy to ask. Go get a drink.
I'll go get a drink. At least the manager, you should leave.
I'm not leaving anywhere.
No, wait.
All right.
Does it seem worthwhile to summarize the feedback somehow so that it doesn't go
That's okay. I would suggest that you guys should less and listen to it.
I think I've heard most of what we've said.
Yeah. Let me suggest that if anyone objects to making that audio available to Holden and Ellie, that you email Lindy within 24 hours. And if nobody objects, Lindy, we can just say, Holden and Ellie, you can listen to that part of the audio.
Right, but feel free.
Yeah.
Okay, just Holden and Ellie, just check with me. Holden and Ellie, just check with me, because I may overlook it or not remember. So before you do, just check.
Okay.
And for everyone, that's hellolindy@gmail.com.
Okay, so you guys are so I have two different feelings going through my head, which is I think maybe we should just repeat the conversation as they want to, because I do, we made the point of making it anonymous, and I feel like them having to come out and ask for that is a bit of a request. I personally would have, I would definitely want everybody to share everything, so it's what I want people to do. On the other hand, I feel a little bad asking them to proactively say, I don't want to share that after we did it with the basic notion that we would. So those are the two things that I'm weighing. So to me, I think it would be okay either way, but just throwing that out, that I feel like it'd just be easy for these guys to share all that whatever they want to share.
Yeah, I mean, certainly I think all of us would concur that we'd really encourage you to say anything that you said here directly to Holden Mailing.
Do you want us to just leave for 5 more minutes while you say, like, hey, what do you want to share, what don't you? Or is that not helpful?
I don't think we need to do that.
Okay. We're having a good time out there.
One of us was.
Yeah, my sense is that I don't think anybody's going to object to you listening. I just want to make sure that there is that space there. But that for future reference, we should probably handle the employee feedback portion of the meeting slightly differently so that we don't have to have a double anonymizing or limitation.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, also, just as we said this before, guys, but you guys can always, you know, feel free to go to a board member with any concerns that you just don't feel comfortable bringing to us. And, you know, I'm telling you that now. I'm not going to be mad that you did it. So, and obviously, they would keep things confidential. And I think Lindy is the main one for that. Lindy's the main contact. You could also come here.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think that's my role. Like, so if people have any issues they want to talk about, like, I'm absolutely available.
And Lindy, you also will keep things confidential on request, right?
Yes, I keep everything confidential.
Okay.
And again, absolutely feel free to email Lindy if you don't, for any reason, want them to listen to the recording.
Okay, so where were we? We were on the progress report, and so that was fundraising. Oh, and research maintenance and systemization. So I think we've been over that adequately. Getting down to the other goals, there's not a ton to say here. Research vetting, that's the category of having, like, outsiders scrutinize our work in a systematic way, also in a less systematic way, getting testimonials. I'm much happier with our testimonials page than I was before. I think it's, you know, we could still improve it. We'll still be on the lookout, but I think it's better. The external reviews, like, we've actually put a fair amount of effort into it. It's been a little hard. I think we have to come back to it and reprioritize it at some point, which might be after Thanksgiving, and just think about new ways to get people to engage, because it's, you know, you're basically contacting grad students and asking them to do work for no reason. For a reason, but not for a pay or anything, because we don't want to pay someone to evaluate us. One idea that we've had is offering smaller kind of grants to the charity of their choice in exchange for evaluating us, and I think that, like, is less of a conflict of interest and is also interesting to see what charity they pick. We have one assignment where that's, like, the whole assignment. Like, basically, we make a donation to the charity of your choice, and in return, you spend 10 hours deciding what charity that is and write out how and why, and use our research as and if you want. We did that once. We're actually looking for someone else to do that with now. I'm not thrilled with our progress on that, but we have put work into it of the kind that we thought would work, and I think we're going to come back to it, and I think we will get that going again. But we do have those. I mean, we have posted probably 10 or 15 of those external reviews of GiveWell's work, and sometimes it's a one page or one charity, sometimes it's more broad.
Can I just say one thing about that? Because I was reading this, and I understand where the motivation for this came from, and I don't want to have a discussion about this right now, but I just want to put on the record that I think we should talk. Holden, Ellie, I'm happy to talk to you offline about whether we still think this is something extremely valuable given the changing nature, perhaps, of the work, and, you know, what might be the best kind of strategy to achieve these goals, let's say.
Okay.
Because this has been an issue for years. I mean,
well, no, we have, you know, we've developed a process for doing this, and we've gotten external reviews, and I think those reviews are, you know, they're linked from our credibility section, and they're good. Like, we just want it to be something that's ongoing and high volume instead of occasional and low volume. That's just the next step. But I don't know. Like, I think this is something we should be doing. So maybe we want a little straw poll. Do other people think this is not worth our time to be thinking about and trying to do?
How much time have we spent on it?
Last year I spent a bunch of time kind of conceptualizing it and getting the assignment together and formalizing it and figuring out how to do it. I mean, this year, Natalie's done most of the work, and, you know, and we've gotten some reviews out of it, and the time investment for myself and Ellie's been minimal.
We've gotten one review.
Oh, really? Is that it? That's not good. Okay.
And how much time have you spent?
Maybe 10 hours.
I
mean, I guess my question is, like, what objective will it achieve, and is it really, are these reviews the best way to achieve that objective? Because if it's for attention or if it's for credibility or, you know, whatever it might be for, there may be other ways, and I really don't think this is important enough to spend a lot of board time on talking right now, but I think it's something we should discuss at some point. Maybe on a strategy call.
The basic goal, so what is your goal?
The basic thought is that we put a lot of effort into putting what we're doing out in public, and there are some people who engage with it deeply, but, you know, not enough for me to really feel like we're being held accountable in a way that just makes me happy about the idea that, you know, qualified, intelligent people are going over our stuff, looking for issues, raising them, and giving them feedback. I just want GiveWell to be more than a small set of people doing their own thing in their own bubble that put out a website and that get a good reputation and that have good Google presence so people use our stuff, but we don't have that same kind of, like, pressure on us from people who are really, like, digging on our stuff and seeing how it is. So I just think the quality of our research will be better, both because of the direct feedback we get, but also just because of the environment of knowing that's going to happen.
The notion of, that's what the quality control of the research, one with the external quality control of the research seems like an important metric, a hard one for all the reasons you're saying, and I'm not sure the path of grad students is a particularly good path, although there's merit to it. But the goal of quality control, external quality control, anyway, I would say that's a pretty important one to crack at some point.
So people have other ways to accomplish this. You know, maybe offline, but we should talk about it. Like, I still think this is a decent basic path. We've gotten some stuff out of it, and I think there are tweaks we can make that might get us more out of it. But, yeah, I mean, we're open to other ways to go down the same path. I mean, another thought I've had more recently is that it would be more appropriate for funders to be doing this, like, to be doing this due diligence on each other. That's a much harder thing to do because people who are funders are powerful and unaccountable, and it's, like, impossible to, you know, like, it's a lot to ask someone to, like, read your research and comment on it, and they're not going to want you to do the same in return for them. But for a long-term goal, like, trying to bring that about, I think is something that we've thought about how to do.
And it hasn't been grad students. It's been the people we've been seeking out have been mostly professors, and the people who we've actually gotten reviews from have been people who contacted us looking for volunteer opportunities, and they don't have particularly relevant experience or credentials in most cases, and so that's why we've made this concerted effort to try to seek out people who do have those credentials and experience.
And there's also another group of people, like, there's also people who haven't asked to volunteer but have just been kind of friendly with us, and we've gotten a few reviews from them. There's a consistent dynamic with GiveWell, which is not surprising at all. But it definitely affects this, and it affects recruiting, which is that when people are interested, like, it's not too hard to find GiveWell these days. It's maybe not as easy as it could be, but it's not too hard. And when people come and find us and are really interested in what we do, they do this kind of thing, and they also are more likely to make good volunteers and good employees. So we've had some success with that. But then when we say we want more and we want bigger, it's just really hard to get that same result out of an active search. That's obviously what I'm saying is not something that ought to surprise anyone, but it's something that I'm not sure exactly what to do about. Like, when I think about recruiting and I think about what qualities we're looking for, I mean, you know, it's like really caring about the work and really, like, being into GiveWell is one of the most important qualities, and it's just hard to, like, post on the job board and find that. I mean, people who are really into us are finding us at a better rate than they used to, and it's almost like what we have is what we have. But, I mean, we want to push. It's just something that's challenging.
Is the major thing that's missing qualitative or objective quality control?
I don't think there's any – I think it's more qualitative. Yeah.
Can you just – what do you mean? What is the difference you see?
Like, reading our reviews and saying whether they think we are doing it reasonably as opposed to, like, looking for, like, fact-checking and looking for errors, which is something that we do internally and that I think we have a decent process for. We also have a lot of volunteers do that, although rarely do they really do a lot of it.
It's like you're inside my head. yeah, you know,
When there are objective things, there are lots of ways to attract attention that serve multiple purposes, like the contest. $5,000, anyone who can find something wrong in one of our objective measures.
Right, go vote pretty bad.
Well, what about that? Are other groups like yours, like the charity, you know, the charity navigators and the guard stores, if you did offered a cross evaluation type of thing?
Charity navigator would make you objectively critique us.
I would not see any value in that. I would see value in funders cross critiquing each other if we could get them to participate, which I think would be very difficult. I do not see value in the other the donor intermediaries cross checking each other. I think what we do is too different from each other.
Yeah, that's my sense too. I was just thinking of.
Could you explain what you mean by funders cross critiquing each other? I have no idea what that means.
I would like someone from the Gates Foundation to read over our stuff and say what they think of it, and I would like to do the same to them.
Okay. How important is it that you do the same to them?
No, it's not. It's not a requirement.
But that's an offer. That's the thing you're offering.
Yeah.
It seems like that's the thing I was trying to suggest is there's somebody you can offer the same service in return for that would give you the value.
Yeah. Yeah, perhaps. I mean, could we offer grad students something? I mean, you know, if our name grows, then it becomes more of a carrot that your stuff gets published on our website. We don't really know what else to do.
Get the management consultants to include from their training.
I always think you're suggesting better.
What did you say, Tim?
Get the management consultants included in their training programs.
I mean, that's another idea.
What
like, that is something I was thinking
about
the other day. What happened?
I think
God said
what that would say about management consultants.
No, I was just, you know, they run those, you know, intensive practice your analytical skills things for the people they're bringing in.
Right.
Give well research one of their exercises.
Yeah, I mean, and I've also thought the same thing about, you know, rather than asking grad students to do this, we could ask professors to assign this to grad students. And we've actually, I mean, there's one professor who's assigning this, like, thing to his students or said he was, and we've checked back with him on that. So, I mean, that's another path. So,
I mean, I think my guess is the best path is going to come from the donors who really care and really dig into the research, and so far, there's basically one guy that really has been interested in doing that and has done some of it, but there haven't been too many of them.
Yeah, I mean, another thing we've been trying to do, the event tomorrow night is an attempt to kind of, look, you're not going to read our whole website, you're not going to nitpick it, but why don't you have a conversation with us about the principles we're using and the process we've used and the conclusions we've reached, and that's an easier way to engage and give us thoughts and give us feedback, and that's something that we hope will grow over time. Tomorrow's, you know, going to be 20 or 30 people and kind of inner circle, but that's, you know, we're starting it. We're going to see how it goes and how we can run it, and then that'll hopefully grow. So that's another path. Just like finding ways to take people who are donors, who are followers, who don't want to sit there and read every word and look for errors, but just find ways to get them to engage with the important stuff. That's that. That's the research vetting progress. And then marketing, I think, you know, we've done a bunch of things to increase our influence and our findability. It's what we call low-hanging fruit, so it's not like there's any of these that we've poured a ton of time into, and we're still seeing good growth. I mean, you see that last chart shows kind of 2008, 9, 10, and 11, and, you know, the growth has been strong, and we're at about... July and August have also been strong, so we're currently, I think, like, money donated through the website is about 4x what it was at this time last year. So, you know, that's good, and if you want more detail on what we've done, I can talk about that. I think, you know, one of the notable things that we have discovered as a way to get attention is, like, people are really interested in us when there's some sort of media-grabbing disaster, and we have not really found those to be, like, what we think are the best giving opportunities, and our normal approach is to kind of only focus on the best giving opportunities. But this is a case where people are so much more interested in the GiveWell approach and the GiveWell mindset in that situation. The situation where it's like, I saw this thing in the news, I want to do something to help, and I have no idea where to go, and I don't trust anyone, which is very different from how most people are doing their philanthropy, where they have a contact, they have a friend, they have an organization, and they don't want us, and they don't want our opinion. So this is, you know, we've just decided that
doing what we can on disaster relief to have recommendations, to have thoughts, to have resources and reasoning, even though it's not like directly accomplishing our goal of moving money to the best giving opportunities. It's something that, you know, is just people are interested in. And when we do it, people are interested and pass it around, and it helps them kind of discover GiveWell. So that's something that, you know, that's probably, that's the aspect of marketing that's taken the most of our work, is just doing a cause that we don't think is the best cause, because it's a cause that, like, people really, you know, when it happens, people are really in a mood where they want to look for GiveWell.
And you're continuing to say in the instances, we don't think this is
Yeah,
we
always do that.
Which
yeah.
is
very consistent with your goal.
Inconsistent
with the goals.
Yeah. I just, it's interesting because it's research. 90% of the work that we do in disaster relief is research, but it's like, in my head, it's kind of classified more as marketing because it's not, the goal is not necessarily to find, like, good giving opportunities on an absolute scale. The goal is to find the best giving opportunities within a sector as a means to the end of, like, people engaging with GiveWell more. So that's, you know, that's just, you should know about that time investment. The other stuff we've done, I mean, we're, you know, we've done some progress on AdWords, and I think we're going to have more. We're going to be working more on search engine optimization. We've done a big website upgrade. So that's marketing or influence. Other questions on that?
So the goal, so just in terms of what you said, I think people's reaction, it's slightly different goals that, and I would have, then I thought you might have defined it, but that where is the goal of changing how people think about charity, whether they engage with GiveWell or not, a goal or not?
Yeah. I mean, but I'm not.
So that's
really
why
sure.
Everybody, when you call it marketing, though, that's
right.
Like basically changing the way people think about it. I think when Fred said that, and he said, so consistent with the goal.
Right.
Not particularly marketing. The goal that I was processing at the time was a goal that I thought was a GiveWell goal,
right.
Which is changing the way people think about these things. And
right.
You get an opportunity to change the way you think about it, and you're seizing it. And so whether they even come back to GiveWell or not, if you've left a mark on how they're thinking about it, that would be consistent with the basic goal.
I agree. I'm just making a distinction between, like, different, like, time allocation between different sub-goals of GiveWell. And one, you know, one sub-goal is kind of having the best recommendations for where to put your money. And another sub-goal is, like, engaging a lot of people in our method of thought. So it's just, I want people to be clear it's under the second sub-goal. I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't quite call that marketing, but I wouldn't quite, it's not the same as, like, the work that we're doing to find top charities in terms of how it fits in. And it's like, when we think about how, when I think about the output of work and how we measure it and what the metrics are, it's like the work we do on top charities, the output of that is the charities we have and the feedback we get from this vetting process on our process for finding charities, whereas the output of the disaster relief, I mean, it's important that the research be quality, but it's almost more measured in, you know, in engagement metrics.
But it's an interesting question, like, in terms of the amount of dollar impact that it probably has, like, at moving money, taking money that would have gone to a really bad charity or a charity that wouldn't have been able to do much with it, at times when there's big donations, and putting it into more effective use seems like the potential to have very high impact in those moments,
yeah.
If the research is done with quality and
yeah.
Given that people are going to make those, like, there's a big pull to make those donations anyhow, guiding that flow of money at those times seems pretty high impact.
Sort of.
That's important.
I mean, disaster relief is a really hard cause for us. It's not a great fit for our process. And so I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I think, you know, getting money to go to Doctors Without Borders instead of World Vision is, like, a huge change. Like, I don't really
yeah.
know. I have a better feeling about Doctors Without Borders. I can tell you why. And we think that in the long run, people choosing to follow these kind of recommendations will lead to better disaster relief in general. But, you know, I also want to be clear. I mean, this is a tough cause for us, and we're being totally open. We're saying, you know, we don't have so much to go on here. This is what we do have to go on, and this is the conclusion it leads to.
Well, and also your traffic on these is disproportionate to the money moved, right? Like on Japan,
yeah,
the money moved low, but traffic
right.
was really high, right?
That's more of a short-term phenomenon, but that's also true. So, I mean, it's true. Like, in the long run, there could be a lot of money following these recommendations. But it does, like, right now, it's true. Like, we get a lot of traffic and attention when we do this stuff, and the money we're able to track
is not a huge part of, you know, of our money moved, which is interesting. There is more money that we're not
doing more in terms of, I don't know, leaving the mark than
right
actually influencing where the dollars end up.
I mean, there's a couple different explanations for this. One is the distinction. There's always been a big divide between people who talk the giveaway and people who give the giveaway. So that's, you know, like, this is a time when people are thinking this way. They want to find us. They want to engage with us. But it's not, you know, it's that's different from acting, and that's an important thing to keep in mind. And it's like, it's almost like you're finding a few people who are going to give this way by finding a lot of people who are going to think this way for a moment. I actually think a bigger explanation for why the dollars are relatively low is just donation size. You know, when a disaster hits, people give very small amounts of money. And when we look at our money moved, it's, you know, a lot of that is coming from, like, five-figure donors and four-figure donors. So there's, you know, that is, there's not a lot of those in a disaster situation. And, I mean, if there are, there's probably people with their own context. Like, this is people who are, I want to give $100, I want to do my part, you know, help me find something. And so we actually, the number of donations goes up more than the dollars.
In response to what you said, sort of really concretely, I haven't looked at the Somalia stuff, but I did a lot of the Haiti and tsunami research that went on last year in disaster relief, and I was very surprised. You can't really tell what people have done. There's not a lot of concrete information on what people did in the wake of these disasters. So in terms of comparing one organization to another and say, well, look, they did better stuff, et cetera, there's just not that transparency. And I was very surprised by this, but just combing through all these websites, I didn't find information that would enable me to make good assessments about the quality of their work.
Yeah, I agree with you that it seems more geared towards, can you help somebody with logic? Like, can you go through a rigorous logic ahead of time that helps guide money that people are giving, and the question whether anything you can do that or not, because the testing, like you said, it may be very hard to track.
We should call a cab if we're going to end this meeting soon. So I think we are. So who's going to do that? So other questions on this topic? Okay. Next topic, this was our last priority for the year. It was something we said we might do, not something we said we would do, and that would be kind of exploring causes that we just know nothing about. I consider this idea to be kind of folded into the initiative that we've all talked about, the kind of, you know, the giving with the aim of potentially funding projects, with potentially doing new causes, and we're now kind of thinking of this as, in terms of the name, we're probably going to call it GiveWell R&D or GiveWell Labs, something like that, where the idea is that this is kind of a more exploratory, improvisational arm of GiveWell, where you're just open to funding anything, doesn't matter the structure, doesn't matter the cause, and over time we try to use the insights from this process to feed into our normal process. So that's, you know, that's something that we've done a lot of work on kind of conceptualizing it, laying it out, planning it, and we have not yet launched it in the sense of announcing it. We're going to do that, I think, pretty soon. And we're, you know, we've done some preliminary work on researching causes that we need to research. But, you know, that's not really such a 2011 thing. It's more of a, you know, we're looking to really ramp that up more in 2012 and have something that we're funding by kind of, you know, mid or late 2012. Because right now we got to focus on finding these top charities before Thanksgiving. And I don't think that this new initiative is going to generate something useful for December for individual donors, and I don't want to take away from the top charity stuff to take that risk. But I mean, we're doing work on it. It's just a matter of how much emphasis. It's also something where we want to move slowly. So, you know, a lot of this revolves around conversations and contacts. So you don't want to be like pouring in all this time. I think we've covered everything. Now it's wild card time.
Do you have a plan for recruiting?
Well, my short-term plan is to make a blog post. I know that doesn't sound like much, but that's where we're going to find, you know, who knows how many people are GiveWell fans who are lurking, who are going to come to us. I think that has a decent shot of getting the person we want the most. After that, like, I also have a long-term plan, which is to invest more effort into having a presence on college campuses, just so that, like, you know, clubs where people discuss how to give, or maybe, you know, maybe they get $1,000 to give away from their from their college. I mean, I know he could have done it in mine. And kind of meet and discuss where to give it and, you know, just build up an interest in GiveWell. Like, we just want that possibility getting to people when they're more kind of intellectually open-minded and open to anything. So that's a we've got a real short-term plan, which is make a blog post. We've got a real long-term plan, which is get a presence on college campuses. The medium-term plan, I mean, no, I don't have a plan yet to have a plan, but I can tell you that I will have a plan to have a plan. When will I? By the end of the year.
I mean, the next 3 months are all focused on the completing the research and recommendations, and then post, you know, what we've always thought in past years is that December is the busy time, but really December is the light time, because once the research is up, there's less for us to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of December 1st, post-Thanksgiving, is when the next year of planning.
I mean, to that end, I would think that it is worth spending a bit of time on that because that's when GiveWell has the most visibility.
Well, we want to spend time on being prepared for December and being out there in December.
Yeah, no, so what I'm saying, though, is that
you
spend a little bit of time so you've got something worthwhile to also say about the fact that GiveWell is going to be expanding when you have the most eyeballs.
Oh, I see, yeah. I mean, that might be the best time for the blog post, for example. Or we can just rerun it.
So
yeah, I mean, just rerunning it, I wouldn't put it off because,
right.
Yeah, I think the first cut is the people who are already lurking.
Right.
The second cut is the people who find you when they're looking.
So I have a wild card question for the board, which is, like, what can we do to make these meetings more helpful? Or do you find these meetings really useful to you guys? It seems like a lot of, I don't know if it, my instinct is it's not really helping you hold us accountable that we have these meetings. And, you know, we hold them in some sense because we're required to and we want to have good governance. But at the same time, it'd be unfortunate if we were spending these hours not in the most useful and valuable way. So first, I'm interested if you do find this valuable, if you do find that it helps you hold us accountable, and if you think there are things we could do that would enable you to do that better. I'd be interested in hearing them either now or we could, you know, talk about it another time.
Yeah, I don't find it, like, it's not how I would do it. I do think Wendy and Tim serve a good purpose here and that there is an oversight thing that's going on here that's necessary, that I think Wendy and Tim are the most of that are doing a reasonably quality job that I'm not doing. I don't know whether there's like some of this stuff that could be handled by a subcommittee or something that just makes that I think it's important that occurs and it's like going over the budget and stuff. I just know I have my own role. What I would like to do is set aside time like this on this kind of basis to look at the research and do more of the quality control function. I think I can help with that. I don't think I'm helping in this setting in any real way. That's my own reflection on the topic. I'm glad they're doing it, and from what I can tell, I think it's something that is necessary. I'm not doing it very well, and don't care to do it that well.
Yeah, I think that's a change we could make. It's a little
it's not bad. I mean, I'm glad. So anyway, this is time reasonably spent. It's just would prefer.
Hold on. I'm also happy to help you guys think about how we can divvy up.
Right.
It just seems to me like the last 4, 5, 6 meetings like this have not been time particularly well spent.
Right. I get more out of the half hour after it than I get out of the meeting itself when.
Right. Although you were only here for an hour.
I think delineating between what we do in the strategy meetings that we've been having now that are reduced a little bit, and, you know, the role of the board has evolved from being much more involved in the operational aspects of things and now seems to be taking a more steward kind of oversight role, and I think that the content hasn't necessarily evolved along with that. So maybe thinking about how to divvy up along those lines might be helpful for us.
I mean, I think it's also worthwhile thinking about there are the things that are happening in these meetings I do think need to happen because they're the things that prevent the small
problems that generate big problems down the
right.
line from happening.
Right.
But because we've gotten a lot more efficient at these things that are mostly just making sure that there aren't small things going wrong, that we can, you know, reasonably allocate an hour on at the back end of these meetings to focus more on quality control and really debating some of the things. You know, I remember one of those first board meetings we had. We were in here arguing for a couple of hours about the recommendations, and I actually found that both useful and interesting, and I think
right.
helpful. And, you know, obviously we're not doing that sort of thing anymore.
Right.
But I feel like at this point we could be more efficient with the other part, to get that done in an hour on a quarterly basis, and reserve an hour to an hour and a half for
sure.
debating less operational stuff and more existential stuff.
Yeah, so the piece that was good for me today was when you guys weren't here and they talked. That was good.
Okay.
That was interesting. Everything else, yeah.
So we should just try. I think we should slim it down. I mean, it's a little like when we have the whole board, I kind of feel like I need to give an update on just like, look, these are our goals. This is what we did. I also feel like we need a budget update. Like, that's just the board's job. Now, maybe what we need to do is, like, have a budget update and just be like, here's the big picture, and take everything else offline if someone wants to, you know, call us out for going over budget.
Right, and you can stipulate the details, and we can have a high-level
discussion. Yeah. So that's fine. So, yeah, we'll work on that. I agree. This has been a little bit of an adjustment because I think we used to have a lot more happen in these meetings.
Disappointing to miss the best part of the meeting.
I know. Hopefully we'll get to hear it someday. But, I mean, it's okay if we don't.
So are we wrapping up, or is there anything else?
Is there anything else? I mean, Ellie, there's that thing we talked about, but, like, in light of what we just said, I think we may as well just take that offline, do it on another board call, talk to someone else about it.
I'm not really following, but okay.
Well, we give them what we can.
Should I conclude the meeting?
I think we should conclude the meeting.
Yeah. Lindy, you have the power to do that because Tom's not here.
I like that. Thanks, everyone. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thanks, Lindy.
Have a great night. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye, y'all.
See you, boys from above.
Thank you.